Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 48 of NML Crossing, where if it's not completely obvious, I'm in a totally empty room right now. For those listening in real time, you'll know that I didn't do anything last week. Well, didn't do anything for the show last week, but I was a move-in unit all week. My time really wasn't my own, and I had to move pretty much the entire movable contents of one house into another, which unfortunately included my entire comics collection, which you don't know how much crap you got until you're forced to come face to face with it. I think with the 9 long boxes I had to buy before the move here, I think I'm up to 108 of them, and all of them had to be loaded into a car, driven to the other house, brought into the other house, and up a flight of stairs. And I did that 108 times. Yeah, so I'm in pain, but we're here now. We're here now, and no promises, but this week should be a full week. This week should be fine. We should be able to get every episode out as scheduled. Again, stuff might come up, so I don't want to go completely on the record there, but hopefully it'll all work according to plan, which is one of those good news, bad news things, because I am keeping up with the scripting part of this. It was easier for me to script because I don't actually need to be where I am right now, which is in the room behind the microphone, because I couldn't actually fit in the room behind the microphone all week. Actually, the past like week and a half or so, it's almost like I was spelunking. You know, I was just like creeping through narrow openings between long boxes just to try to drag them out, which, oh boy, not fun. But like I said, if we get all 5 episodes out this week, it's a good news, bad news thing, because we're going to be able to finish No Law, New Order, which is great. But that's going to be immediately followed by a couple of issues of Asriel, which, oh boy. Like I said, I'm ahead on scripting, so I know what happens in those issues, and oh boy. I can't say it won't be fun. It's not going to be good, but it might be fun. Maybe we'll have some fun with it. But I don't know how much longer I want to vamp here. I still have a lot on the plate for today. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss as many days as I've missed. You know, I wanted to make sure I touched base, even as just a little bit of a good faith measure, that I'm not going back into hiding. It's funny, I'm looking right now at the only issue of a comic that's still in this room, and it's an issue of all things, Spider-Man Deadpool, which is a series I totally forgot about. And thing of it was, I filed it with all my Spider-Man miscellaneous comics, and then I moved everything else over, and the Spider-Man box was one of the last ones I had to fill. And then I get to where it should be in the box, and I realize that I actually filed those with Deadpool books. So the Deadpool box is buried very, very deeply. So, like, for the rest of my days, I'm going to have this one stupid issue of Spider-Man Deadpool that I'll never read staring me in the face, just mocking me. And we talk a lot about how we collect things, right, and how we store things. Anybody else ever have anything like that happen? You know, where it's like you have all your stuff ready to go, you finally put in the time and you make the space and you just dedicate yourself to sorting and filing and getting everything where it needs to be. And then when the dust settles, you find this one stupid comic just laughing at you because you forgot it or you missed it or you misfiled it. Oh boy. Anyway, how about we get into today's issue, which is Batman Shadow of the Bat number 83. At a March 1999 cover date, the story is called No Law and a New Order Part 2, Strategy, written by Bob Gale, the first issue of Shadow of the Bat not written by Alan Grant. Pencils, Alex Maleev, inks, Wayne Foucher, colors, Matt Hollingsworth, letters, Willie Schubert, edits, Illich, Gorfinkel, Peterson O'Neill, cover price, $1.99. Now we open with a fella named Squish, who's one of Oracle's operatives. He's there to report in that he just saw him, the bat. Well, not actually in the flesh or anything, he just saw the spray-painted bat tag. Now he says it's the same symbol they used to see in the skies, BQ. BQ is before Quake. Now Babs tries to settle this dude's tea kettle a bit, suggesting that maybe this is just somebody using the bat tag to, you know, mess around, maybe mark territory, inspire a little bit of fear. Now Squish says that nobody really ever saw Batman before, even, you know, back in the BQ days, so there's really no reason to assume that he's not somewhere in no man's land, even as we speak. Now after disconnecting the call, Babs starts to ponder what this could possibly mean. She considers how lawless No Man's Land is and wonders if Batman would resort to tagging. One thing about this is bugging her, though. Since if it really is him, how come he hasn't touched base yet? From here, we hop into an interlude. We get a few interludes here. It's interlude number one is called The Punk and the Nomad. And we meet up with a fellow who just got a fistful of batteries. He's stopped by another fellow, the Punk, who pulls a gun on him. Battery guy ain't afraid, though, since he knows, you know, the going rate of goods in Gotham. Of course, we know money is no object anymore. It's all about usable goods, right? So he knows gun guy ain't gonna waste a precious bullet in order to get some batteries. In fact, he's pretty sure the gun being jammed in his face isn't even loaded in the first place. And so he calls the bluff, and it pays off. Over to the GCPD, where Commissioner Gordon is about to take a swig of some of Gotham's most mineralized drinking water. It's full of rust. They just tell themselves it's got a really good iron supplement. As he's drinking away, an officer named Pacheco, he reports that the Blue Boys have taken back another block, and Gordon does the honors of hitting it with their tag. Jump back to HQ, where they plan their next move. Gordon decides he wants to take back old Gotham. Now, Officer Pettit, he's all about it. He's just chomping at the bit to get into the thick of it here. He's a real go-getter. He's made for this no-man's-land landscape. We got Detective Foley, though, who's got another suggestion. He suggests maybe not stretching themselves too thin. Maybe they should ensure they can hold on to the neighborhoods they already have before attempting to expand their turf. Now, Gordon, he ain't feeling Foley's spoo here. He says Foley's thinking too much like a cop. Because now, the GCPD, they're not officers, they're an army. Pettit pretty much calls Foley a little bitch. Now, Foley gives us a little bit of an exposition on old Gotham. Now, as we mentioned last episode, it's the site of a street war going on between the Low Boys and the Street Demons. And Gordon, of course, is well aware, and he reveals his plan. You see, they're going to dump a little bit of fuel on the already smoldering gang fire in hopes of inciting some violence, thereby letting the gangs thin each other's ranks out before the Blue Boys pounce. Bullock is kind of taken aback by this, perhaps for the first time seeing Gordon in a semi-disturbing light. Hardbach pipes up to ask if maybe Jim's got an ulterior motive behind this. Since, you know, Barbara Gordon just so happens to live in old Gotham. Now, Gordon, he ain't even coy about it. He's like, damn right I got a motive, and he dares any of his officers to find an issue with that. And they don't. Next up, it's interlude number two, The Punk and the Little Kid. Now, we return to Gun Guy, the Punk, who's holding up a young child, demanding to see the contents of his backpack. The Punk then finds himself looking at the business end of a bow and arrow. Now, this archer introduces himself as the kid's partner, and he runs the Punk off. The archer then offers the kid safe passage to the Penguin for 50% of the haul. And the kid, I mean, he's just a little kid, he's got no choice, so he agrees. And the pair decide to become actual partners. The archer promises to protect the kid, and the kid, he's small enough that he can squeeze into tight spaces if need be, so he's going to be of use as well. Back to the GCPD, we got Jim and Sarah chatting about the state of things. They head to the roof of whatever building they're staying in, where they see a clothesline, and the clothes hanging there sort of resemble a swooping Batman. Sarah asks if Jim is thinking about him. Gordon says no. He's actually worried that he himself is becoming too much like him. He wonders if the bee had suffered a kind of trauma that drove him into becoming a vigilante. Sarah suggests that perhaps the bee has finally decided to do the right thing legally by hanging up his tights. And Gordon says that'd be one hell of a kick to the head. Elsewhere, we meet up with a pair of no-man's landers who had just traded away their flashlights for some winter coats. Now, they happen upon a hobo fire, and they find themselves surrounded by some ne'er-do-wells who want their jackets. I think it should go without saying here, if you come upon a hobo fire, you don't engage, right? Now, before the hobo fire guys can attack, they wind up getting their collective asses kicked by Batman? Once the beating is done, we get a good look at our caped and cowled character, and we can see that it's got boobs. The baddies are incredulous, not believing this vigilante to be the actual bat, and so she beats them all up some more. Now, after running the bums off, the kids with the coats step out of the shadows to thank the bat. And they also can't help but to point out that the bat is a girl. She suggests that she's always been the Batman, citing how nobody's ever really gotten a good look at him, and how embarrassing it would be for a baddie to admit that he'd gotten his ass kicked by, you know, by a woman. And she calls back to various eyewitness descriptions of the Batman. Of course, we know 7 foot tall, big fangs, big claws, and that's pretty much how we started this project. Back in Detective Number 719, where What's-His-Face said pretty much exactly that. Now, our new Batgirl spray paints the bat tag and tells the coat kids to spread the word that so long that there's a Gotham, there's gonna be a bat. Back to the GCPD, where they're planning the old Gotham take-back. Now, Officer Pettit, he volunteers to fire the first shot in order to incite the gang war. He cites various other first shots throughout military history and says that he'd be the best man to do it here. Gordon tries to settle him down, saying that he and Bach will try a less violent or risky tack. Now, after Pettit leaves, Bach comments that it's no surprise someone like him decided to stick around in no man's land. Interlude the third, the punk and the stranger. Now, our punk once again approaches a passerby, asking to see what's in his backpack. Only, this passerby is the Joker. Whoops. Joker jams a fork right into the punk's carotid artery, assumedly killing him. He dies with a sick smile on his face after being sprayed with some of that, you know, Joker toxin. Joker then declares this neighborhood to be part of Jokerville, as he spray paints a crazy-looking smiley face on the wall. We jump back to the hobo fire. Now, one of the goofs who got his ass kicked by Batgirl is telling another goof that he'd just gotten beaten up by Batman. The other goof isn't so sure he believes him since, A, Batman ain't real, and B, if Batman were real, he'd have left Gotham back before the deadline. Now, the first goof notices a weird old man sitting nearby. He approaches him doing the whole, like, you got a problem sort of thing. He goes to goozle the old man and only winds up yanking off his fake beard. Wonder if that'll come back around. The old man flees the scene. We wrap up today in Old Gotham, where Gordon and Bach witness some no-man's landers burning books in order to keep warm. Our blue boys manage to find their way into an alley that's adorned with a street demon's tag. Gordon crosses it out and sprays a low boy's tag next to it. Which, you know, wouldn't be such a bad plan if only the street demons weren't there watching them do it. We close out with our good guys surrounded by the gangbangers. That's where we end things. Next time out, more law and new orders in Batman number 563. Now, we do get a letters page here, which is pretty cool. It's in shadow lines, of course, and this is mostly Alan Grant's goodbye missive, and it's really nice to see. Now, he cites reasons outwith his control for his removal from Shadow of the Bat, which, I have no way of knowing this, but I'm starting to think maybe Doug Mensch also got his walking papers, but kind of projected this, you can't fire me, I quit, and oh, by the way, your story sucks too, sort of response. Dixon and Grant here, they seem to have taken the shift in the Bat offices like, you know, like professionals. So what are you going to do? Grant thanks everyone for reading and for writing in, and he assures us that he's read every single letter and he's noted their contents. He says we can follow him over to the Anarchy ongoing. He then thanks Stan Guard of Troy, Michigan, whoever that is, for voting Shadow of the Bat, quote, top of class among the Bat books, narrowly beating Detective Comics by 0.01 of a point. I haven't the foggiest what this is all about, but I don't know. Maybe I'll try to do a little bit of research on who Stan Guard is and what the top of class in Bat books actually means. But that's the last we've got of Alan Grant for now. We do have a From the Den essay here, and it's a short one. It's mostly to introduce us to Bob Gale, the writer of the Back to the Futures. He also wrote a comic book called The Green Vomit when he was a teenager, and he was also the co-founder of a St. Louis-based comic book fan club. Now, regarding No Man's Land itself, Bob Gale says that it's a story about civilization. Quote, why we band together, why we need each other. And this is why Denny figured he'd be the best guy to kick things off. That's our issue, but we're not done yet. We're going to look at something in Wizard Magazine issue number 90, February 1999 cover date. And thank goodness I noted this, because all my wizards are at the other house now. I moved them all, so I couldn't do this now if I wanted to. Now, the 1999 preview for the Batman books, for like the, I guess the credits here, it just says creative team rotating. We know we're on the round robin from this point on. In the section titled What You Should Know, it says, the earthquake devastated Gotham City has completely gone to hell in a bucket. Now Batman must protect a lawless city that was kicked out of the United States. Oh yeah, there's also a new Batgirl in town. Under the What's Gonna Happen tag, we got times are tough in Gotham during the year-long No Man's Land storyline. Even the cops have been reduced to one of the many street gangs fighting for turf. Simple necessities of life, such as batteries and food, are auctioned off for incredible sums of money, and the Penguin is running the auction action. Think Bats is gonna try and loosen the bird's stranglehold on the city? Yup. In the Down the Road section, it says, you loved her in the Batman Adventures animated series. Get ready to love her in the comic. Harley Quinn, the only woman crazy enough to be the Joker's sidekick, gets introduced to the DC Universe continuity in a July story arc written by cartoon producer Paul Dini. And the new Batgirl, her real identity is still tightly under wraps, but rumor has it DC might let fly with that surprise by mid-1999, or maybe leave it until 2000. Well, I think it's going to be a little bit sooner than that. The inside scoop is look for a signed and numbered set of Batman prints by Alex Ross, based off the lenticular cover for Batman No Man's Land number 1, similar to last year's Superman set. Word on the street is that this new status quo, possibly with a new direction and all new creators once again, will be on Batman's plate come the year 2000. And we have a Book of the Month section in Wizard, which is Batman No Man's Land. How about that? This is all about No Law and a New Order, parts 1 through 4. And they write this like a little tourist guide here. It's something. Visit scenic Gotham City. It's no longer part of the United States, which means no sales tax. Thrill seekers will love the roaming gangs and supervillains trying to carve up the city like they would a Christmas turkey. Look closely and catch a glimpse of Gotham's newest hero, Batgirl. Kevlar body armor recommended, and sorry, no refunds. I think I put a lot more credit into Wizard than I should have. You know, in reading these and actually transcribing these Wizard articles, and while they're still like a really good time capsule and it's good for, you know, the gestalt of the books that we're discussing, I don't know why I like put blogging below magazines mentally when they're really not all that much different, clearly, in reading these and actually writing them up alongside my own words here. It's not as far off as I thought it would be. I don't know. But that's Wizard. That's Wizard for today. Before we get out of here, let's do a quick mailbag. We got a couple of letters here talking about No Man's Land number 1. We're going to start with Chris Yu, who says, this was the perfect first issue for this storyline. All the information a reader needs to understand in this new era is provided. And the Bat teaser is just enough to draw you in and make you come back for more. It was well worth going through the Quake Master and Nicholas Scratch and his incompetent goons to get to this story. The title graphic novel gets thrown around a lot. Not every great comic story is a graphic novel. The Dark Phoenix Saga and The Judas Contract are both great serialized stories, but they're just parts of a larger overarching story of the X-Men and the Titans, respectively. This is a graphic novel. It stands on its own, away from the rest of the DC Universe, and has a definitive beginning, middle, and ending. This is different from everything else that was on the shelves at the time. It's more than just a change in status quo. I was a loyal DC and Marvel reader at the time this came out, so I was buying just about everything they were putting out. All of the Bat titles were already on my monthly pull list, but this storyline put the Bat books higher on the pile of what got read first. And that's a lot of great points there. We did make it through the Quake Master and Nick Scratch to get here. I love that. Context is king for this kind of thing, right? And not to put the cart ahead of the horse here, but I'm kind of plagued. When we're done with our No Man's Land coverage, we're going to hopefully segue into something else. But we're going to do it with all the context that comes before it. You know, I'm the value of context, you just... I don't know, I feel like it's a lost... It's not a lost art, it's just something that's lost. We're accustomed to these, like, quick bites of content now. Where, gone in 60 seconds, right? You gotta get everything you want in there, say what you need to say, and it's on to the next thing. Now, the way I do things is a little bit different, clearly. But I feel like it's, I feel like it works better with all the context. You know, we know where we've been to see where we're going. And I feel like I think it's been a while since I recorded. So if I'm repeating myself or if I'm falsely attributing quotes to myself, I apologize. I think I mentioned going from the road to No Man's Land to No Man's Land as being something like The Wizard of Oz. You know, it's black and white and then it's color. You know, it's just a totally different thing. It's very much like that, and I don't think we can fully appreciate this new normal without trudging through what came before. Good, bad, or indifferent. It was a lot of good that came before. It was a decent amount of bad there as well. And you're right, the graphic novel term gets tossed around a lot. I think that makes people who read comics feel less ashamed of reading comics. Graphic novel just sounds more adult, you know? And I think every trade collection, somebody will call it a graphic novel. I mean, that's the section in Barnes & Noble or whatever bookstores near you. It's graphic novels. It's not comic book trade paperbacks. It's graphic novels. I think that just makes people feel like they're more literate reading them. And I do have a lot of opinions on that. That's one of my bugbears, like, you know, floppy for single issue. I'm a little precious about that. But your point here is well taken. This is altogether on its own. And it does have a beginning and a middle and an end. And the thing with No Man's Land is, like, you could almost excise it from the continuity altogether. You could go pre-Quake to New Gotham and, relatively speaking, barely miss a beat. This is a totally new thing. This is Batman's Age of Apocalypse, only it's happening in the primary universe. You know, the Age of Apocalypse, that could be read on its own, or it could be omitted completely. Of course, Marvel's gone back to rehash and rehash and reuse and rehash the Age of Apocalypse ever since. Had they not done that, it would have been fine. But you're right, it very much is its own thing. Now, one more thing about... our friend Nicholas Scratch. I was out today. We had some running to do on another side of town, and I was nearby a comic shop that I try to stop into at least once a month. It's like an hour and 15 minutes from my house, but we were in the area, so I popped in. And the fella there, he knows that I'm doing this No Man's Land deal. When I bought a stack of No Man's Land Asriel comics, he's like, "Whoa, okay, what's this all about?" So I told him what I was planning to do, and he asked me about it. He's like, "Oh, how far have you gotten?" And I'm like, "Oh, we're finally to No Man's Land. We're through everything else. We're finally to No Man's Land." And he's like, "Oh, okay." And I said that I was happy that we got through all the Nicholas Scratch stuff, and he looked at me like I had three heads. He didn't know who Nicholas Scratch was. He's like, I haven't thought about Nick Scratch in, 25 years. And I'm like, that seems to be a trend. Nobody remembers this guy. I was only half kidding when I said that I think he might just be a shared delusion that we're having on this show. But yeah, it was pretty funny. He's like, I have not thought about that character in ages. I just thought that was funny. Seeing that we trudged through the Quake Master and Nick Scratch and the latter of the two, nobody remembers at all. It's almost shocking that he hasn't made an appearance just as like a funny ha-ha, where a current year writer is just trying to poke our ribs and be like, hey, remember this weird character? It's weird. He's never come back. His last appearance, as far as the DC wikis are concerned, was Azrael number 100, which is a sobering reminder that Azrael did run 100 issues, plus a million. And the fact that Nick Scratch has been off the table since, 2002? 2003, maybe? It's pretty insane. Pretty over 20 years they didn't bring this fool back. I'm telling you, I got a pitch to DC for the 25th anniversary of No Man's Land. We need to do a Elseworlds No Man's World thing with Nick Scratch as the big bad. I think we can make this happen. That's something we need to make it happen for the betterment of humanity. I don't know. Anyway, thank you so much for writing in, Chris. I really, really appreciate it. Next up, we got one from CJ, and he says, this was a great issue. Of course, he's talking about No Man's Land number one. He says, I first read this with the rest of No Law and a New Order story arc in a hybrid comic/trade paperback released shortly after the arc came out. It looked like a thick comic, a bit bigger than an annual, but with the same kind of binding or spine used for an annual. It's more like a trade paperback, though, since it collected the entire arc. It was $5.95 and a cool artifact since most stories won't be collected in this type of format. A quick Google didn't bring up much about this specific format and release, only seeing it mentioned if it's for sale, like an eBay link, for example. And it's funny you mentioned that, because I actually came across that at a record store probably a month and a half ago. And it was a dollar there, but the cover was like barely hanging on. And I really, since it did have like that annual spine, like it was kind of crinkled, like to the point where it would not be fun to flip through. it looked like it'd seen some stuff, it looked like it got wet. It was crumpled. The cover, like I said, half of it was just flopped over. It was just real, real garbage looking thing. But I almost bought it anyway, just for the novelty of having that collected edition there, because I'd never seen anything like it before either. And it seems like just the perfect thing, like for the time, like if you'd missed that first month, especially since these books were, relatively speaking, under-ordered, and that they were, according to all my Usenetting, these things were selling out. And it's funny because like people would be complaining about how stupid the story is and the internal logic is not there. And yet they were selling out. People couldn't find them. People were getting angry that they couldn't find them. I would have to compare this to, the death of Superman, where you had these Superman fans who were buying books every single month, supporting this character, supporting the creative teams, even without the stunt of the death. And then suddenly Superman's like the big story in comics and everybody wants in. And it's to the point where the loyal followers and readers of the books can't even get their hands on them because all these outsiders are speculating or curious in general. I would have to figure, on a smaller scale, of course, that No Man's Land had a similar sort of a effect at retail, where you had the fans who always bought the Bat books through the good, through the bad, through the ugly, and now all of a sudden it's a hot story, so they can't even get their hands on a single issue. That's probably quite annoying, I would have to imagine. So for those fans who were unable to procure copies themselves, or those who might have just been curious and missed the initial launch, this collected edition, really, really good idea. And we talked about this during the early parts of X-Lapsed, where Marvel was putting out those Dawn of X trade collections, those sort of thin ones, but it collected everything you needed to follow. And I thought that was just a really smart decision. You know, since everything goes to trade anyway, to do it in that format where you could just catch yourself up on an entire line in one volume, brilliant stuff. Really, really smart. And keeps everything fresh in everybody's minds. So it's kind of too bad that the Bat Office didn't keep up with that. I think that would have been a really good sort of supplemental way to receive these stories as we're moving forward here. If you don't want to buy everything, you just buy the one thing. It's got everything you need in there, all done in one, without having to wait for a trade. It's, I think it's a little bit easier. It's more palatable. You know, you're not buying a $20 trade. You're buying a $5 or $6 thick comic, a collected edition. Pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. And thank you so much, CJ, for mentioning it, because I totally forgot about it. I saw it like a month and a half, 2 months ago. And I was going to mention it, and I totally spaced it. So I'm so glad you mentioned it. And I'm so glad that that's how you read it the first time around. I came on a little bit later than that, just with those weird and wildly abridged trades. But thank you. Thank you so much for writing in and for listening. And of course, I would love to hear from everybody who listens. I know things have been spotty for the last little while, but hopefully things are coming back to back into order. And hopefully this is the last week of the squeak. My squeaky chair is going to be retired after this week, and I'll be in something far more comfortable and far less noisy, which is until I break the chair, which my wife gives about a week and a half before I break the chair, because I don't know what it is. I flail when I talk. I don't know. I just break chairs. The only chair I haven't broken is the squeaky one that I'm sitting on now, and it's just a folding chair. But anyway, I'd like to invite anybody who wants to chat to write in. Of course, you can find me all those different ways. Chris is on infiniteearths.com, chrisandreggie.podbean.com, weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com, and of course, on all the socials and whatnot. But I think that's where we're going to end it for today. I'd like to thank you all so much for your patience and for spending some of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll hopefully be talking to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, start.